Good morning. And peace be with you. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Mary Johnson. Joining me on the chancel this morning is our guest speaker, Irene Gulveson. Irene has been in our pulpit several times over the last few years. She is a graduate of Eden Seminary with a master's degree in theological studies. She served several UCC churches over the last few years as an interim pastor. Her sermon that we'll hear later in this morning is entitled, Is There Really Nothing New Under the Sun? I welcome Irene and you into this community of brave, curious, and compassionate thinkers and doers. Here we bring people together with meaning and inspiration. We are a house without walls, a congregation without spiritual limits. We are a faith that honors your mind, your heart, your journey. We are Unitarian Universalists. And I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place the card in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll then send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the activities and programs going on here at the church. We are glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. There is a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 5, through those doors, and then to the left, and in the first room in the foyer, past the foyer. And in the front to my right is a spirit chair with quiet activities for all ages. And you're invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat, just as he's doing. Children and youth are encouraged to participate in our religious education program when we bless them and sing them to their classes later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And I have a few announcements. Next Sunday, we will be celebrating the 180th year of the founding of this congregation. Reverend Dawn will be in the pulpit, and we will have special music by the quintet, No Strings Attached, thanks to Tracy Howcoke. There will be a potluck lunch following the service, and a display and short program about the artifacts and historical treasures from our past. So we hope all of you come next Sunday. And following the service and the potluck lunch, we're going to start decorating for Christmas. So Mary Weber is in charge of that activity. Let's see. I have a couple other announcements. Peg Flock says, take the gourds from the worker room if you want any gourds. They were there all month for our November activities. I would remind you that for potluck Sunday next Sunday, you might want to consider bringing something besides your potluck dish to the food pantry. And there's a basket, a box out in the foyer for the food pantry items. And we are doing a Christmas for an Oasis family again this year. The request from that family is up on the easel in the worker room. And you can sign up for what you would like to give to whatever person you choose on that. Paula and Larry are in charge of that. And so contact Paula if you have any questions. And please get your gifts to church by December 15th, gift wrapped with a tag saying what is in the gift. And we remind you that we do have a fragrance-free zone in our sanctuary during worship. And if you're sensitive to chemical scents found in many personal care products and detergents, you're invited to seek refuge in those pews. And we request that you don't sit in that designated area unless you are free from chemical fragrances. We ask you also turn off your cell phones or put them in airplane mode, as the concentration of signals from so many devices causes problems with our sound equipment. And we begin our service with a prelude by our accompanist, Nicole Robbins.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. I invite Peg Flock to light our chalice as we join in our unison words entitled Drawn Together by Jennifer Gray, and they're printed in your order of service and projected above. We come together every week, bound not by a creed or a mutual desire to please one God or many gods. Yet we are drawn together by a belief that how we are in the world, who we are together, matters. We light this chalice together in the knowledge that love, not fear, can change this world. The invocation I'm going to share with you this morning is entitled The Circle of Connection in Ourselves and was written by Anne Mason. Spirit of life, your very presence among us is what gives us connection. Help us to sense that beneath our feet is the strength we need to keep us grounded. Help us to feel that behind our back is the protection we need to feel safe facing our fears. Help us to know that before our eyes lies the beauty we seek to feel astounded. Help us to lift our heads high enough to be aware of the vastness of our sky and of our spirit. And help us to know that within our hearts lies the love we need to complete the circle of connection in our lives. We are grateful, Spirit of Love, for this day. May we use all of these gifts, our feet, our backs, our eyes, our heads, and our hearts, to bring love into this hurting world, this world which we so value, which we cherish. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in our opening hymn for the beauty of the earth, number 21 in the gray hymnal, and projected on the wall. Irene does this time for all ages. We ask the children to come up front, please.
Let me get this out. I don't want to break your...
Okay, thank you. Yes, I invite not only all the young people, but all the young at heart to come up. Okay, we could probably use some adults if they would like to join us. Great. Okay, so let me get out my board here. Now, I'm going to write a word on here, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what you think this word might mean and what it may be part of. Okay, what's that word?
Tribe.
Okay, now if I would say the word tribe, what do you think of? do you think of if I would say tribe? Yeah? Do we think of some people maybe that make up a tribe? Yeah. A group, right. That's exactly right. It's a group, usually, at least, you know, historically based on family, extended family, okay? All, you know, kind of in from the same area. Okay, if I would to ask you to tell me, if I, again, saying the word tribe, of some peoples that we think of that live in a tribal kind of community. Who do we think of? Native Americans, right. Okay, so I have something here, and I'm going to let one of you hold it. Would you like to hold it? Okay, we'll have more things, not to worry. Okay, we have that, and I have this book, okay, and it's about the Kiowa, okay, and it has great pictures in it of people living in a tribe, okay? Can you think of other peoples that we think of who might live in a tribal situation? Different indigenous people, okay. Can you name, like we say, tribe, where we would might think of? Africa, okay. I have two things from Africa that my mother-in-law got. Okay, would you like to do that? Yeah, okay. So here's a picture of a giraffe, and there's a woman down below. And this is actually a necklace. Okay, that was made in the southern part of Africa. I tried to find out exactly where, but I'm not sure. Would you like to wear that for now? Okay, all right, let's think of someplace else in the world where people live in tribal kind of communities, that we could use that term. Eskimos, right. Well, we're going to treat them like Native Americans, okay? Other places. South America, right. I don't have anything from South America. What about the Middle East? Okay, I lived in the Middle East for 3.5 years. So, and people definitely live in tribal communities. So who would like to wear this? Would you like to wear this? Okay, we'll put it on your head. Okay, like so. And then we're gonna put this on top. So all you need now is a camel. I didn't bring one, I'm sorry. Right, okay. All right, now there's another group, we don't normally refer to them as living tribally, but it's the same way, and that's clan. Whereabouts is that? Ireland and Scotland, right? Okay, so I brought a couple of plaids. Okay, somebody like to, doesn't have something right now? Would you like to be the clan lady? There you go, okay. So in the United States now, we do have Native Americans, certainly, who consider themselves a tribal people. But for most of us, we do not think in those terms. But there's sort of a new meaning of tribe that's come along that has nothing to do necessarily with family, extended or otherwise, but has to do with people who share a common interest or a common allegiance. Let's think of some things that might fall into that category. I have my other bag of goodies here. Okay, watch out, I don't want to hit anybody. Okay, all right. Let's think of the category of sports. Okay, all right. What do we have in the category? I'm going to just come behind you here. Okay, sports. Where do we live? In what country? I mean, when I say that, sporting country.
It's red.
Cardinal territory, right? Okay, so we have the Cardinals. Now, we don't consider ourselves a tribe, but, you know, people gather together and share a common interest in Cardinals. Now, what about if you lived in Chicago? Cubs, right? So, and let me tell you, there's a definite rivalry there, without a doubt. Now, I grew up in New York, so where do you think people gather? Yankees, right? Yankees and the Mets. But I grew up in the 50s, and I was a Dodger fan. But then they went and left me. Some nerve. Okay, what's another area that people might think of themselves as a tribe, if you want to extend that? Universities, right. Universities. So if you went to or even high schools in St. Louis, you know, if you went to one or another, you have a tremendous loyalty there. What about politics? Well, we have a red team, right? A red tribe. We'll just call them the R's, the Republicans. And then on the other side, we have the blue tribe, right? The Democrats.
And there's the green tribe.
And then there's the green tribe. I did bring green. We have the green tribe, right? Smaller. So we'll put a little G. Okay. And then, of course, we have the libertarians as well in this country. So we'll put those tiny two. Okay. They can be right there. They're going to have to be that color. Okay. All right. And then what about religion? Isn't that kind of tribal? Yeah. Okay. So we brought some things here. I have my Quran. I have my Jewish prayer book and my menorah. I have my Buddha. I have my cross. And I have my Bible up there, but I'm going to be using that later. So people also define themselves in those categories as well, okay? It's not a tribe in the same sense that it's a family kind of connection that everybody's based on, but it's a group connection based on an interest or a special commitment, okay? So now you can think about that a little bit when you go off to your classes. Now, I'll need to take all my things back, I'm sorry, but yeah, I know, no fun at all, right? Thank you, thank you. We'll just leave. That's okay. That's okay. Oops, thank you. Thank you. We'll just put all of this here and then I'll... Did you like that book?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we'll put that over here.
And Melody are in the hard papers on
your... Getting up.
The purpose of the church is to encourage all who gather there to grow more generous in spirit and in action. This is the great end of all the world's faith traditions, to bring the human closer to the divine by acts of creation and compassion. We now take an offering that allows us to exercise that all-important generosity of spirit, an offering that will support this self-supporting church and its many ministries. The gifts of the congregation will be most gratefully received. May they be joyfully given.
Thank you.
please join in the offering of blessing? It's on the wall behind us. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are our offerings.
All right. Our responsive reading this morning is found in your hymn book, 611. It's a Hindu, and it's also on the wall, and it's Brahman. I am the self that dwells in the heart of every mortal creature. I am the beginning, the lifespan, and the end of all.
I am the radiant sun among the light givers. I am the mind. I am consciousness in the living.
I am death that snatches all. I also am the source of all that shall be born.
I am time without end. I am the sustainer. My face is everywhere.
I am the beginning, the middle, and the end in creation. I am the knowledge of things spiritual.
I am glory, prosperity, beautiful speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and forgiveness.
I am the divine seed of all lives. In this world, nothing animate or inanimate exists without me.
I am the strength of the strong. I am the purity of the good.
I am the knowledge of the knower. There is no limit to my divine manifestations.
Whatever in this world is powerful, beautiful, or glorious, that you may know to have come forth from a fraction of my power and glory.
And now a reading from Ecclesiastes. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. For the fate of humans and the fate of animals is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and humans have no advantage over the animals, for all is fleeting. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knows whether the human spirit goes upward and the spirit of animals goes downward to the earth? So I saw there is nothing better than that all should enjoy their work, for that is their lot. Who can bring them to see what will be after them?
Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows of this community. For things in our heart that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter or from the bowl here in the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, water that reminds us of the source of all life. If you have a joy, a sorrow, a celebration, a struggle you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. Let us have a few moments of silence. This morning's reflective prayer, entitled For All It Is Our Lives, was written by UU minister Eric Wickstrom. Spirit of life, known by many names, yet by no name fully known, we gather today with hopes and dreams, and also with fears and wounds. May we be reminded that all things come and go, that today's joys and today's sorrows will in time give way to those of tomorrow, and that those of us who have strength to share today ought do so while we can, and that those who are in need ought allow ourselves to receive, for tomorrow those roles might well be reversed. Spirit of life, mother and father of us all, help us to remember those who are not here with us today, those who need what we have found here, and those who have what we here need. May we always be open to growth and change, to movement, to grace. In the name of all that is holy, and in all the holy names that have ever been uttered, and those that have not yet even been imagined, let us say, blessed be, shalom, and amen. When I'm raking leaves in my yard, and wow, has that been an ongoing task of late, there's nothing like a healthy splash of KSHE radio to keep me energized. Bring on Led Zeppelin or AC/DC to get me and keep me moving. But to be honest, my very favorite radio station doesn't feature hard rockers. It features thoughtful, intelligent programming presented by people like Diane Reams, Ira Glass, Terry Gross, Ira Flatow, just to name a few. I am, I guess, at heart, an NPR junkie.
It's pretty much where I get my news each day, along with a little 6 a.m. BBC News or PBS NewsHour on television. But another great thing about NPR is that book reviews are often included. And once in a while, there is a book featured that I just have to read. Most have been quite rewarding, but now and then, one has created a total lens-shifting perspective, which has enormous impact on how I see the world. And such has been The Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging, and it was just published this past May. When I heard Scott Simon of NPR's Weekend Edition interviewing its author, Sebastian Junger, I knew I'd be heading off to Hayner Library that afternoon to see if there was actually one up for adoption. And guess what? There was. In fact, there's two copies, one at each branch. It's a short book, only 133 pages long, but I found it compelling in its wisdom. Now, just to give you a little background on Junger, he's an award-winning journalist and a war correspondent, and he's the best-selling author of a number of books, including The Perfect Storm, which came out probably about, 12, 15 years ago. But the particular impetus for this book grew out of a very personal experience that Junger had growing up. He was raised in a very comfortable suburb of Boston. And even at a young age, he was aware of something missing in his life and the life of his community, a community where neighbors hardly knew each other and nothing really dangerous ever happened. There was never anything that required people to band together in order to survive. And reflecting on his childhood and his young adulthood, Junger realized that what he always yearned for and missed was the chance to prove his worth to his community and to his peers. And he asked himself, how do you become an adult in a society that doesn't ask for sacrifice? How do you become a man in a world that does not require courage? Surely this has to be something new in the human experience. And his journey of discovery actually began with an across-country hiking trip he took as a young adult. There he encountered what it means to take responsibility for another. When a homeless man who spotted him on the highway walked as much as a mile out of his way to share his meager meal with Junger. And it was then that Junger came to employ the word tribe to describe those people one is willing to share the last of one's food with. Junger's journey of discovery continued and grew with time spent in places such as Sarajevo, Nigeria, and Afghanistan as a journalist, witnessing not just the violence and the hardship experienced by so many people, but the enormous loyalty, belonging, and meaning also experienced by the people most affected. Sentiments like these are rare in modern society. And he discovered, too, that for many people, and this comes as a surprise, war feels better than peace. And hardship can actually be a blessing. Often disasters are remembered more fondly than weddings or tropical vacations. According to Junger, humans don't mind hardship. In fact, they frequently thrive on it. What they do mind is not feeling necessary. And sadly, according to Junger, it seems that modern society has perfected the art of making people not feel necessary. To make his point, he compares modern American society with what was encountered by the first Europeans who landed on this continent. The lifestyle of the native population they met here and waged war against had barely changed in 15,000 years. Over the course of three centuries, America became a booming industrial society cleaved by class division and racial injustice, glued together by a body of law that theoretically, at least, saw all people as equal. The Native Americans, on the other hand, lived communally in mobile or semi-permanent encampments that were more or less run by consensus and broadly egalitarian. Individual authority was earned rather than seized and imposed upon people. The proximity of these two cultures over the course of a number of generations presented a stark choice on how to live. Factories were being built in Chicago, and slums were taking root in New York, at the same time that Native Americans fought with spears and tomahawks some thousand miles away. What might seem surprising, it was to me, is to hear that any number of European Americans would wind up joining Native American society, while the opposite almost never happened. Of course, Junger warns his readers not to over-romanticize Native life. War and brutality were certainly present, but it did have a lot of appeals. A less harsh religion, hunting was certainly more interesting than plowing fields, sexual mores were more relaxed, the clothing was more comfortable, but perhaps most appealing of all was the fundamental egalitarianism. Resources were shared, and the simple ethos promoted loyalty and courage, not accumulation of wealth, but the preservation of the tribe was the essential task. Junger believes that the fundamental question for Western society isn't why tribal life might have seemed so appealing, but why Western society sometimes seems so unappealing. On a material level, it's clearly more comfortable, more protected, but the shift towards individualism and the accumulation of personal property greatly diminished group efforts towards a common good. Numerous cross-cultural studies have shown that modern society, despite its miraculous advances in things like medicine and science and technology, is afflicted with the highest levels of depression, schizophrenia, poor health, anxiety, chronic loneliness in human history, and is it any wonder that suicide rates seem to keep rising? The intrinsic values of feeling competent at what we do, feeling authentic in the living of our lives, and feeling connected to others is what seems to make for human happiness, not extrinsic values like our looks, our money, our status. A study in the Journal of Affective Disorders said, the economic and marketing forces of modern society have engineered an environment that maximizes consumption at the long-term cost of well-being. In effect, humans have dragged a body with a long hominoid history into an overfed, undernourished, sedentary, sunlight deficient, sleep deprived, competitive, inequitable, and socially isolating environment with dire consequences. According to Junger, it appears that modern society has gravely disrupted the social bonds that have always characterized the human experience. And it is disasters that thrust people back into a more ancient, organic way of relating. Disasters create a community of sufferers that allows individuals to experience a reassuring connection to others. As people face an existential threat, class differences are erased. Income disparity seems irrelevant. Race is overlooked, and individuals are assessed for what they are willing to do for the group. It seems that we are wired to help one another, and people enjoy enormous social benefits for what they are willing to do for the group. In what I see as a very clear analysis of war, Junger points out that in addition to all the destruction and loss of life, war also inspires ancient human virtues of courage, loyalty, and selflessness that can be utterly intoxicating to people who experience them. However, because modern society often fights wars far away from the civilian population, we certainly know that, soldiers wind up being the only people who have to switch back and forth from battlefield to home front. And though the seemingly growing number of PTSD cases can certainly be attributed to a number of sources and issues, one important one seems less to do with trauma on the battlefield as re-entry into the society. What soldiers miss so much isn't the danger or the loss, but the unity that these things often engender. A modern soldier returning from combat goes from the kind of loose-knit group that humans evolved from into a society where most people work outside the home, where children are educated by strangers, where families are isolated from the wider community, and personal gain almost totally eclipses common good. If the earliest and most basic definition of community or tribe is those people you would both help feed and help protect, then a society that does not offer its members a chance to act selflessly in these ways is not a society in any tribal sense of the word. It's just a political entity that may lack enemies, but may fall apart on its own. Today's veterans often come back to find that though they were willing to die for their country, they're not sure exactly how to live for it. It's hard to know how to live for a country that regularly tears itself apart along ethnic, racial, demographic lines, and where the gap between the rich and the poor continues to widen, and politicians accuse rivals of trying to harm their own country. In combat, soldiers all but ignore these differences. Is it any wonder they get so depressed sometimes when they come home? Soldiers who have experienced the tribal way of thinking while at war realize that when they come home, that the tribe that they really were fighting for may not have been their country so much as their unit. So now, that I've introduced you to Sebastian Junger's take on the human condition, it's now time for him to take a seat. Come over here. And as promised, invite Koheleth, the 4th century author of Ecclesiastes, into the conversation as we ponder the question in the title of this sermon, Is There Really Nothing New Under the Sun? Well, I think on one level, we'd all have to certainly support the view that there certainly is. Think science, think medicine, think technology, and think of all the stuff we have. Stuff not imagined maybe even 23 years ago, let alone 2300 years ago. But if we think about the intrinsic human condition, I think we are more reluctant to claim that anything much has changed. In fact, our essential wiring seems not to have changed at all. Only the societally created environment into which we have been born has changed. And the other thing which has not changed, even though we are adverse to admitting it, is that we are not separate from, but actually an integral part of the animal kingdom. Much of our behavior is a result of those very same drives that motivate other creatures. To survive, thrive, and reproduce are key components of that wiring. There's nothing inherently bad in any component of that wiring. We can only be judged on how we choose to respond. Do our behaviors result in building up or destroying community? Does our search for tribal connection result in empowering not only ourselves, but others? Or does it set up a dangerous divide between us and others, which only leads to societal breakdown? Again, is there anything new here? And so as we ponder what it means to be church, I guess we have to ask ourselves some questions. Do we offer homecoming and belonging to those who gather here? Do we offer opportunities for connection, for selflessness, for meaning? I cannot but help to think back to the time when the followers of a small town prophet risked all to proclaim an end to religious, gender, and status barriers, not to mention redefine what family and tribe really means. And then I think about how that way of being was largely hijacked some 300 years ago. 300 years later, evolving into something profoundly judgmental and without mercy for those who chose to differ, condemning not only our wiring, but holding doctrine more important than behavior. I think one of the things that I most respect about the Unitarian Universalist Church is its intentional focus on inclusiveness, its openness to diverse ideas, its commitment to a just society, its involvement in the wider community, and its true welcome to all who cross its threshold. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Irene. I now invite you to rise in body and our spirit and join in our last hymn, We Laugh, We Cry, number 354 in the gray hymnal and projected on the wall.
Freedom just to have some time.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
I send us out as a people who are inclusive, are welcoming, are inviting others to a place of homecoming and belonging. Continue what you do. It's wonderful. Shalom.